Good afternoon. Welcome to the second day of our April panel. I am Mike Pirtle from Omaha, and I'm pleased to be joined today on my left by our Chief Judge, Frankie Moore from North Platte, and on my right by Judge Dave Arterburn from Papillion. We were scheduled to have three cases this afternoon. The second case has been continued until June, so we will take the other two in order, and this is being streamed live on NETV, so we will call the case twice. If there's anything of a confidential nature, you want to keep that in mind. With that, we will get started. Our first case is Shaw versus Nebraska Medical Center. You may approach. Just a second, Mr. Plodgy. Before we get started, 10 minutes for the defendants, have you talked about, or for the appellees, I'm sorry, have you discussed how you're going to handle that? Okay, very good. Thank you very much. Sorry, go ahead.
Thank you, Your Honor. It has been written that the modern justice system is all about system and nothing about justice. That statement is the essence of this case, that the modern justice system is all system and no justice. In an attempt to systemize and streamline the processing of lawsuits, our trial courts have become more concerned with deadlines than providing justice. It's almost as if we have assembly line justice. I ask you to remember when we were all law students. And our professors told us that the fundamental purpose of the appellate court system was to ask, is it fair, is it right, and what is justice? The facts in this case are relatively simple. How we get here has been a long and circuitous route. As I address you, I want to be mindful of the fact that you are judges here to ask the questions of what is right, what is fair, and what is just, and that you are not elementary school monitors here to monitor tidiness or dates, but you are here to ask whether, if there have been violations of certain orders, were they willful. I stand before you and tell you that I failed to appear for a hearing on a motion in limine. I didn't appear because of my own personal illness and my own personal terror. And because of that, I didn't appear. I forgot about the hearing, but I called later that day and I notified the court. As you review the record, there have been two discovery progression orders. The second one was entered on October 30th. Yet, if you look at the progression order, it gives plaintiffs until November 1st to designate an expert. That fact illustrates the fact that at that time, rightfully or wrongfully, my health concerns were not helping me function properly. But at no time have I or my office ever willfully violated any court order or court deadline. If you start adding up the numbers, and I don't like to do this, but you will, let me first talk about the facts. On September, and they're clear, on September 20th, 2012, Jocelyn Shaw, the mother of Zach Shaw, the daughter and her, was hospitalized at the Nebraska Medical Center for pneumonia. She was treated there for 5 days. She was treated with multiple doses of antibiotics. Her condition improved. She was discharged on September 30th to a skilled nursing facility. When she was discharged, the medical center made a fatal mistake. They failed to transmit, communicate the orders for the antibiotics. While she was at the skilled nursing facility, her condition worsened. It worsened such that it deteriorated and she developed sepsis. She was readmitted to the medical center on September 30th, but her condition was in dire distress. And she died on September 6, 2012, due to the pneumonia, the sepsis, and cardiopulmonary arrest.
Is there any opinion in the record that it was due to pneumonia?
I beg your pardon?
Is there any opinion in the record that was before the district court or for our record that she died due to pneumonia?
Yes, it is. It is. And furthermore, what is before you is on January 7th of 2013, the medical center had a meeting with the family. On January 7th, 2015, over 5 years ago. And at that meeting, the medical center, and who was present from the medical center? A pulmonologist, the risk manager, and an assistant chief of medical affairs, as well as members of the family. And what did they tell the family? They told the family that we messed up. We failed to transfer the order for the antibiotics to the skilled nursing facility. They told the family, medical center told the family, that as a result of that, her pneumonia went into sepsis. When she came back, and the medical records confirm this, when she came back on September 30th, the Nebraska Medical Center, her sepsis had gotten into such a severe state that she was now having organ failure. And she died on October 6th. And the medical center said that it was our fault. She died because the order for the pneumonia, the order for the antibiotics had not been transmitted. Now,
but that information comes in through an affidavit of your client?
It comes in through two affidavits from the clients. And it's interesting to note that at no time have the defendants produced any of the witnesses that we list that say that's not true. In fact, their only witness in terms of an expert is not even part of the medical center. Their witness says that she died in terms of kidney failure. Well, of course she died of kidney failure. She had sepsis. The sepsis was attacking each organ of the body. So part of her death was because she had multiple organ failure caused by the sepsis. And you know, we live in the year of 2018, and we all know about the power of antibiotics. We know all of us have been to doctors and they say, now, I want you to take this for 10 days. And take it for the 10 days. Don't stop in the seventh day when you're getting better. You have to take your antibiotics. One of the miracles of modern medicine, or of the 20th century, is antibiotics.
I'm sorry to interrupt you, Bill.
Please.
I do want to give you a chance to deal with one of the key issues in the case, and that's you've talked a little bit at the beginning about the deadlines, but we now have, and I know your brief was written before, we have the Putnam case from the Supreme Court. How do you distinguish this case from the Putnam case?
Thank you, Your Honor. I was prepared to address it. In Putnam, in this case, there had never been a trial date set. In Putnam, there were three trial dates set, and they were canceled or extended, and the trial was extended three times in Putnam. The fourth time, the trial judge did not grant the extension, and he ordered the case to trial. In this case, there's never been a trial date set. Furthermore, in Putnam, on the eve of the fourth trial setting, plaintiff's counsel appears with a new theory of case, brain injury, and wants new experts. From the very start of this case, we have declared what our theory of liability is and what our theory of damages are.
How can the defense know what your theory is if they don't know what your expert says?
Because we set it forth in our amended complaint. And we set it forth in our amended complaint, in one sense, Paris, if I can use that word, what the medical center said on January 7th when they had the meeting with the family. And our theory of liability is pretty simple. The failure to treat pneumonia, the failure to treat pneumonia resulted in sepsis, the sepsis resulted in multiple organ failure, the multiple organ failure, death. The theory is very simple, and our theory has never changed. Never have we made a motion to change our theory, and when we filed our original claim with the state of Nebraska under the State Tort Act, we have set that forth, and we also set forth the fact that there had been this meeting on January 7th, all in full disclosure of what had gone on. Our theory has never changed in this case.
But the problem is we're not talking about theory, we're talking about declaring an expert witness.
Okay. That's an interesting thing, and the question is, the expert witness would not come as no surprise, offer no new surprise, no new ideas, nothing new. It's simple, basic medicine. Furthermore, we could go to the, if you choose to go with it, go under the thorn exceptions and talk about being a situation where you don't need an expert. And I don't know if we need an expert in this case.
We're going to have you wrap it up throughout the time.
I'm sorry. So I go back to the fundamental question of what is fair and right and what's just. This woman went to the medical center to seek help. The medical center failed her. Now she goes to the legal system. The legal system should not fail this family. There has been no prejudicial harm done to the defendants. We are not offering any new theories. We're not offering any new theories of medicine. From the very start, when this whole thing started, we talked about pneumonia, antibiotics, sepsis, multiple organ failure, and death. Thank you.
Would you have 30 seconds to each of the appellees' time, please?
So the evidence is clear. Dr. Worley, under the common knowledge exception, met the standard here. There's no evidence that he didn't do what he was supposed to do. Second, third point, cause of action. All right? Cause of action in this particular case, you have to have an expert witness in regards to this case. Mr. Pelagi said he died of renal failure, or that argument. We said, died of liver disease. Our expert clearly said liver disease is why this patient died. Antibiotics would not have been of any assistance. Fourth thing, let's talk about his standard of care, his expert that he offered an affidavit, which he didn't offer. He didn't disclose this expert until February 22nd, 2016, well more than 2 years after this lawsuit was filed. At no time did that expert in his affidavit address the cause of death. Talks all around different things, never said the cause of death was a pulmonary issue resulting in sepsis. Talks a little bit about sepsis, makes no opinion, based on a reasonable degree of medical certainty, that the cause of death was sepsis or a pulmonary issue in regards to this case. And at no time did he ever address, if we get back allowing him to have an expert, at no time does he ever address. He knows what the standard of care is of a first-year internal medicine resident at the University of Rasmussen Medical Center. There's no evidence in regards to that. The next thing I'd like to address with you folks is that this meeting had nothing to do with the University of Rasmussen Board of Regents. Okay, there's some meeting in January, he said January 6th, with the hospital. The Board of Regents isn't present. We have no involvement with this. There's nobody there on our behalf. We don't know what clerical error they're talking about. Dr. Worley did make a clerical error. He typed in the discharge instructions, the discharge orders. There's no evidence to say that nobody, he didn't do it. Now, in regards to causation, I don't know who said what for Smoothfield's affidavits. And if you look at the two affidavits, they say the exact same thing. Obviously, I can't imagine two people sitting there and let their order together. But it's word for word. They're the exact same two affidavits. But whatever was said, we don't know who said it, what authority they had to say it, what foundation they had, what type of expertise they would have. Certainly that would never even make it in trial in regards to this. Judge Randall said, hey, let's just assume it does. It still doesn't make it. Doesn't create the issue of fact in regards to this situation. So it's clear in regards to this particular case. The judge had the inherent judicial power to do what he did. Puckett makes it clear. The court had recently looked at it, and the court spent a lot of time saying, hey, we want these things moving along 12 to 18 months. At 18 months, we don't have an expert from the plaintiff. At 2 years, we don't have an expert from the plaintiff. The judge said enough's enough, all right? And I'm sorry, Ron might have been ill around that time, but that's not what's at issue here. Because there were plenty of times, well before, way back in May, to disclose an expert, then in October, then in November. And then he doesn't actually show an expert until February 22nd, 2016. So in regards to that, he didn't have one at the time of the motion in limine anyway. He hadn't shown up.
What was the May date, the first deadline?
It was. As far as identifying an expert, we had a February 2nd PSO. He had to identify an expert May 5th or May something 2015. That came and went, and then we had two more. And if you notice, each time we allowed an amended PSO, he'd already missed the deadline. It wasn't like he was calling a week ahead of time and saying, hey, I've got a deadline coming up, let's extend this. We were gracious enough at that time to try to work through this, but enough is enough when we got to
the time. I just have another question. So from that May standpoint until when the case was dismissed, was there any other discovery going on during this time at all?
You know, they took the deposition of Dr. Worley. And I think that was pretty much, and they took the deposition of a nurse or somebody from the med center. Those two things were done. And then we deposed the plaintiff, and I think Juanita Johnson, we deposed her too.
Was that during this time frame?
I think so.
Okay.
But I couldn't be honest with you. I couldn't say for sure, because I hadn't looked at that.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you for the time. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Good afternoon. May it please the court, my name is Catherine Cheadle. I represent the other appellee in this action, the Nebraska Medical Center. As Dave Welch just argued to the court, I am also asking today the court to affirm the decisions of the lower court in this case. I want to take up first the motion in limine, as that is the first issue of error raised by the appellant in this case. With respect to the motion in limine, the standard for review is very clear.
it is an abuse of discretion standard, and the language in Nebraska is very clear on what that standard really is. Was the decision of the court reasonable, defendable, and in line with the evidence presented to the trial court? I think in sum, absolutely. This trial court was faced with an unopposed motion in limine from Nebraska Medical Center and the Board of Regents, and the motion had merit. We had the appellant missed his expert deadline. So the motion presented to the court had merit, was properly noticed to the opposing party, and was unopposed with evidence, argument. So not only did he not show up to the hearing, he didn't brief it, he didn't file anything in response, he didn't file a motion for continuance. So the action of the court in granting the motion in limine that was unopposed is absolutely defendable, absolutely reasonable, and absolutely in line with the evidence. And so I clearly think it meets the standard for being within the judge's discretion and within his inherent power to grant that motion in limine. With respect to the summary judgment, as the court knows, that is reviewed de novo. But the evidence that you have before you, I think based on your questions, you understand really clearly what this case is about and what medical negligence cases are all about, which is really expert testimony. These cases do not go forward the vast majority of the time without expert testimony because, quite simply, the layperson does not know medicine. Plaintiff's counsel, appellant counsel, Mr. Pelagi, has routinely tried to oversimplify the medicine in this case, I think. We all take antibiotics. We understand antibiotics. But we are not physicians, and I know that antibiotics are not foolproof. I don't think any of us can testify to the effectiveness of antibiotics. I know that my children get ear infections, and they get one antibiotic. It doesn't work. I have to go back and get a stronger one. It doesn't work. I go back and get Augmentin. And so the effectiveness of antibiotics is not something within the scope of a layperson. And so I don't believe the evidence is before the court or could be relied on with the common knowledge exception, even if plaintiff or appellant's theory is true that she didn't get her antibiotics. There is no evidence, and the layperson could not conclude that had she received these antibiotics, it would have prevented her death. We have too many underlying conditions in this patient. We have liver failure, kidney failure. You'll see that in the affidavits of Dr. Johnson. This patient has several serious underlying medical comorbidities, any one of which could have caused her death. And Dr. Johnson does an excellent job of laying out exactly what her death was caused by. It is an oversimplification to say her death was caused by a lack of antibiotics. That is not within any layperson's common knowledge to be able to conclude that without it. We absolutely need an expert to say, had she received these antibiotics, we know statistically more likely than not she would have survived. That is not something I can testify to or any attorney or any layperson can give to a jury. That is absolutely an expert that needs to say that, and the trial court was 100% correct in finding that causation was outside the scope of layperson testimony or layperson understanding. With respect to plaintiff's third allegation of error with the damages, the trial court was also correct that the damages needed to come in through expert testimony. And that really is because without the expert testimony to link the cause of death to a breach, the damages are irrelevant. Plaintiff's counsel and many plaintiff's attorneys link or allege all sorts of damages, any number of damages, but none of the damages become relevant until they connect their dots, until they show a breach in the standard of care is what caused this person's death. We don't have that here. We have an allegation of breach, and although I should note that the Nebraska Medical Center disagrees that the breach in this case is common knowledge, I think we have an allegation of breach, but we don't have who did what or what the standard of care required in this case. What should have been done differently? What should my nurses have done? Nobody says that. Nobody says your nurses should have done X. I'll just wrap up real quickly here. So I do think the damages in this case needed expert testimony. I think the court was correct in finding that, and this decision should be affirmed. So in sum, I am asking the court today to affirm the decisions of the lower court. The court did not abuse its discretion in entering the motion in limine, the order in limine, and the evidence before the court on the summary judgment supports the decision and is in line with the summary judgment, and there was no genuine issue of material fact.
Thank you. We will take the case under advisement and submit it. Thank you for being here today.